Morning, everyone. I woke up this morning praying for you all, and my most central prayer for you is that in the midst of the many voices that you will hear today, heard Angela's voice and all the beautiful voices of the people in the video and had some chance to chat with one another, in the midst of the many voices, my prayer for you is that you would hear the one voice, the voice of God, who comes to us in every season of our lives and in each day in our lives with a word for us that sustains us in the midst of our weariness, that gives us strength and power to fulfill the vocation, the task that He has uniquely given us to do. But if you are a follower of Jesus, I think you are aware that that voice most often does not come to us in a lightning bolt. We would like it if it came in the skywriting thing or in a message in a bottle or whatever, but most often it comes to us in a whisper. It comes to us in a still, small voice, which means that we have to be a kind of person who is living at a certain kind of pace in order to receive that word. And because especially in Silicon Valley, we are trained not to live in that posture and in that pace, God leads us on a journey. He leads us on a journey through the desert, a wilderness journey. In the wilderness, everything slows down. If you've been to the desert, if you could imagine hiking through the desert, you would only take what is most necessary. You would not take your laptop, even though it's an Air and it's much lighter than they used to be. You would not take your iPad. It would be useless to you. You would not take a big novel that you were reading, even if it was interesting to you, because you would be shedding every bit of unnecessary weight for the sake of your survival. You would strip down to only the essentials, to water and sun protection, and whatever nourishment you needed to make your way through. And in the desert that we call Lent, these weeks that lead us to Easter, we strip down to the spiritual essentials. What is it that we most need to be about in order to make our way through the desert to the land that flows with milk and honey, the land of abundance? And we've named these essentials in Lent as the essentials of fasting and giving and prayer. Hopefully those things are intuitive to you by now. I want to reiterate that we do these things, we do them imperfectly. We do them never ever to get God to love us more, because that would be an utter impossibility. There is absolutely nothing you or I could do to get God to love us more. He loves us as we are. He already does. But we take up these practices in order to protect our souls, and in order to nourish our souls, and in order to tune ourselves in to the voice that is speaking to us. Now, throughout Lent, we are immersing ourselves in the ancient songs written by a prophet named Isaiah, who wrote the longest book in the Old Testament. These songs are messages from God to God's people while they were on their own desert journey. And I hope you will read along, and I hope you will, throughout the week, kind of turn to these chapters and get the broader context that they are in, because they tell us something essential about the nature of God and His desires for us. But moving through the book of Isaiah can be a challenging task. I don't know if you've ever made it all the way through the book of Isaiah. It's a long book, 66 chapters. It's easy to get lost and discouraged, and it's easy to quit. So before I get into today's text, let me give you just like the two-minute university on how to orient yourself to the world of Isaiah. Isaiah can be broken up into two large chunks. The first 39 chapters, and then the last chapters from chapter 40 to 66, two distinct chunks of the book Isaiah. And in the middle, dividing those two chunks of Isaiah, is an event that we call the exile. Israel was beaten up by the Empire of Babylon and dragged away to another land in Babylon, which we think is somewhere around northern Iraq these days. These two chunks of Isaiah have two different audiences. The first part of Isaiah is speaking to Israel in their rebellious season while they're still living in Judah, in Jerusalem. So if you were here last week, that was this whole thing about a song about a vineyard that wasn't producing sweet fruit. And the latter chapters are written to exiles who are living in what is modern-day Iraq. They are discouraged. They are beaten down. They're far from home. They're homesick. You could imagine that. Some of them were born in exile. That's how long the journey was. Chapters 1 through 39 happen sometime around the 7th century BC, and it's in a whole 100 years later that the Isaiah prophet is speaking to the discouraged exiles. And because there are two different audiences living in two different centuries, the message is different. So in the first part of the book of Isaiah, you get a message of warning. It's woven in with a message of love. Last week's text was a song of love. But it's a message of warning, calling God's people to repent of their injustice. And then in Isaiah 40 through 66, there's a message of hope to people whose hopes have been dashed. Last week we were in Isaiah chapter 5, this message of warning spoken with a heart of love. The next 5 weeks we're in Isaiah 40 through 66. It's a message of hope, a message of hope to people being beaten down. So we jump to Isaiah chapter 42, a song of God's rescue for hurting people. This is what it says, Isaiah 42, 1, "Here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations." I'll keep going, but a comment along the way. "Here is my servant" is a royal announcement. It's a presentation of something important or someone important. Who is this servant? One of the tricky things as we read these servant songs is that the servant is kind of a mysterious figure, and it goes back and forth in its reference between what God's people were always called to be. We are called to be God's servant. And so these songs speak of God's destiny for us. But because Israel fails in her vocation, and because we do as well, God sends a Messiah who perfectly fulfills his vocation. So all these texts refer to the Messiah, to Jesus as well. So as we read these servant songs in these weeks, listening for God's word, we hear a word that is at once about us, and it's also telling us something about Jesus, about his passion and accomplishment on the cross. Now, the first thing that we read here is that the servant is chosen, that the servant is upheld. The servant is one in whom God's soul delights. So as we read on, I know we're like, you know, all this kind of academic information, but this is about you. So I want you to open your heart and see if you can tune in to the experience of the truth that you are the one whom God has chosen. You are the one in whom God delights. You are held in the strength of God's hand in the struggling season in which you find yourself. Let that sink in for a moment. Let that sink in and then move forward. And as we read about the fact that this servant has a mission, and that mission is to bring forth justice to all the nations of the earth. And for those of you who are newer to the river, I would just want to narrate that one of the key moments in our journey as a church, in about year 5 of our 28-year-old history, the moment of embracing the reality that the vocation of justice is central to the gospel of Jesus, not a colonial takeover of the world, but a concern for the least and the lost, wherever they may live. How is it that the servant is to accomplish this mission? Well, he accomplishes it in a way that is surprising, that is utterly unique in the world. Verse 2 of Isaiah 42 says, "He will not cry out or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street." He's not shrill. "A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not quench. He, this servant, will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be crushed until he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands wait for his teaching." This is a fascinating and beautiful and, I think, riveting picture of the servant of the Lord, of what we are to be and of what Jesus is perfectly. The servant is passionately mission-driven. He will establish justice in the earth. The coastlands are on his target. He's going to the ends of the earth. And yet he is gentle. "A bruised reed he will not break. A smoldering wick, a wick that barely has a little bit of flame, he will not extinguish." He's coming around that wick. His desire is that the fire of your heart not go out. And if you're a reader of the New Testament, this imagery in this language captures the heart of Jesus specifically. Matthew chapter 11, Jesus is confronting the unjust religious leaders of his day. He confronts them boldly for the ways in which they're blind to the needs of the poor. And then he says that "I am gentle and humble of heart, and I have come that you would have rest for your soul." The last verses here tell us that Jesus will be wounded. He will not be crushed until he has established justice. It's this picture that he will be opposed. He will be pressed upon, but he will not be turned back. He will suffer for the mission of God. And then there is this closing section, chapters 42, verses 5 through 7. This is now not the prophet, but is now God speaking to the servant. "Thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it, who gives breath to the people upon it and spirit to those who walk in it. I am the Lord. And I have called you in righteousness, and I have taken you by the hand and kept you, and I've given you as a covenant to the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring up the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison, those who sit in darkness." So the repetition of these twin themes, that the servant of the Lord is held by God, the servant of the Lord is kept or protected by God. And secure in the hands of God, then the servant has security, passion, and direction to complete the mission of God, which is a grand mission, the mission of rescuing imprisoned people, of opening blind eyes, of setting captives free. That is the servant's mission. That is the passion of God. In the journey of our wilderness wandering through Lent, that is the whisper of God to us about what he's created us to be, about the heart of the Jesus whom we worship. Now, that's a grand vision, but it seems sort of out there. Don't you think? It's like, that's pretty impressive. And we're saying that the servant is Jesus, and it's to be us. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you have more self-confidence than I do. But that language sounds like Jesus to me. And I thank God for that, because it's a beautiful image of Jesus. That language doesn't sound a whole lot like me. You know, it's like, can you wear that clothing? If you have a LinkedIn page, could you put on your LinkedIn page, Steve Rappinchuk, healing blind eyes and setting prisoners free. That's my personal purpose in life. So I want us to try this on as we journey through the Lenten wilderness. This is who God has made us to be and set his Spirit upon us that we might fulfill that mission in our own unique way, in our own unique way. So let's exercise our imaginations by thinking about people. I thought of Harriet Tubman, the abolitionist. In history, we celebrate her birthday in the month of March. She was born into slavery in the 19th century. She escaped when she was 27, and when she gained her freedom, she made 13 trips back into the South to set other slaves free. What gave her determination to risk her life to set slaves free? A firsthand experience of the rescuing love of God, the servant whose passion it is to set prisoners free. So she said these words, God's time, and she's speaking of emancipation, God's time to set prisoners and slaves free is always near. He set the North Star in the heavens. He gave me strength in my limbs. He meant I should be free. And these poetic words really are a narration of her experience of God. She's saying he set the North Star in the sky as she journeyed at night following the North Star. He gave me strength in my limbs. She's saying, you know, how does she go for days without food, with people chasing her, dogs chasing her, trying to kill her? She's saying there was a strength from above. There was a strength that filled her body. There was a power that overtook her being. As she talks about how it is in her writings that the voice of God led her along the way, warning her to change directions. Through dreams, she was led to safe houses and to people who could help her. In her desert, she listens. In the midst of the many voices, she heard one voice. In the desert, she learned to trust that voice, to praise her God, and then to serve him in his mission with all her heart. Can you wear those clothes? I don't really feel much like Harriet Tubman. You know, they called her General Moses. No one calling me the general, you know. No one calling me Moses. I mean, maybe I feel like Moses afraid. You know, Moses who did not want to go. Moses who was afraid that he could not speak. But if you and I cannot wear these clothes and embrace this mission, maybe it's a sign that we're listening to too many of the wrong voices. You know, in our history, the month of March also is sort of an anniversary history of the river. So I was just remembering, in our almost 30 years of history, there are a long line of people who launched justice ventures out of their worship of Jesus, serving literal prisoners, or serving kids who've been trafficked in the Philippines, or serving people who live in poverty in Chicago, Some of them left marketplace jobs to form their own organizations. And some of them kept their jobs and just figured out a way to take their vacation time and invest in something that mattered to them more than their daily work mattered. And even beyond those impressive and fascinating ventures, I just want to say that there is a way in which every ministry of the church should be seen as a venture towards setting prisoners free and opening the eyes of the blind. There was that video and Angela's announcement about Alpha. And if you did not grow up in the church, I want you to think about how blind you were before somebody invited you to church. I thank God for the person who invited me to church because I was just so blind and so deaf and so unable to understand and so mute in my inarticulateness to describe the agitation of my soul. And it took some regular person who was not a missionary soul, who was not a public presence, just a friend, to help open my eyes. If you are a disciple of Jesus, this is what your life is to be about. And if you want to know Jesus, this is what he is about, opening blind eyes and setting prisoners free. It's the reason we're emphasizing the spiritual practice of giving through Lent, not just fasting, but giving ourselves away in some way. We're talking about giving here not primarily as financial giving, although I will always say we welcome that as well, but giving time, presence, and attention to those who are in need. So often we live with a sense of compassion fatigue in Silicon Valley. And that's real and it's to be paid attention to and it needs to be managed. But I want to say to you that the antidote to compassion fatigue is never avoidance. It's simply to simplify and to focus. Not to find a grander thing to do, but to find a real person to love and to serve. To know a person's name. To learn something about their story and to let that story into your soul. That's what we're talking about here. Let's be people whose eyes are opened to those who are imprisoned, literally and figuratively. People who are imprisoned on the other side of the globe, in Gaza or in Ukraine. People who are imprisoned on the other side of the tracks, who are sleeping in a bus, who are sleeping behind a building, behind a gas station, or who are imprisoned on the other side of the street, some neighbor that is struggling in a way that you kind of had a sense about, but you've never heard the story, and you don't quite remember their name. The other side of your office, people in prison everywhere that Jesus cares about and is asking us to care about as well. But as with Harriet Tubman, we are only able to live out a vocation of rescuing slaves and prisoners. We are only able to embody the rescuing love of God when we know it firsthand. When we know it firsthand. We, like Harriet Tubman, only risk our lives for the sake of others when we know that we have been set free. When we know that we are always being set free. That's the journey of discipleship, of realizing that there are all kinds of ways, even if we are financially and professionally successful, that our souls are confined and that our vision for life is confined in a prison too small for the man or woman of God. So as we close today, in the spirit of opening up passion and strength for the vocation that God has for us, I'd like us to close our time by leading a prayer for reflection upon the prisons in which we can become confined, even if physically we can go on vacation anywhere we want. What are the prisons that confine our souls, that confine our vision? So take a moment and close your eyes and get comfortable. Take a couple of breaths. Get relaxed. And let me just name some of the prisons that can smother the soul. If you feel like you might fall asleep, you could just open your eyes. The words will come on the screen if you like, but if it helps you focus, you can keep them closed. We can get confined in the prisons of our thoughts. We have all kinds of thoughts that confine our lives. Thoughts about ourselves that are either self-glorifying or self-hating. We get confined in a prison of performance orientation or perfectionism. And if that describes you, I want to say that the servant of the Lord is present to lead you into a wide open meadow of blessing and delight. There are prisons of fear, fear of failure, fear of rejection. The servant of the Lord is present. Lead you into faith that empowers a life of adventure. There are prisons regarding our finances, either attachment to a certain standard of living and maintaining that standard of living curtails your choices of what you might do, or finances in the sense of debt. Some of us here today are in debt that's crushing to us. God wants to lead you into the freedom of contentment, of sufficiency. There's the prison of addiction to substance, food, or unholy imagery. Take a moment. See if you could come to some moment of clarity about a confining prison in your life. And with the paper that you've received, just take a moment and write a prayer calling out to the servant who can save you. In a few moments, Abby and the team will come and lead us in worship. Spirit of the living God, it's our desire to live in the fullness of your rescuing love. So open our blind eyes to the ways in which we are imprisoned and in need, that we might know ourselves as held and cherished and liberated.